Today on Colchonero Chat, La Liga and the Champions League. Two different competitions, two different versions of Atletico Madrid. We'll break down Espanyol's visit to the Vicente Calderon, breaking down a defense, something Atletico could not do at the weekend, and then preview Tuesday's clash in Munich, which could see Los Colchoneros complete a perfect Champions League group stage. Vámonos! Buenos dias! This is Colchonero Chat, the premier English language podcast on Atletico Madrid and a part of IntoTheCalderon.com, SB Nation's home for all things Atletico. I'm your host, Jeremy Barron. I'm joined on the program today by Into the Calderon staff writer, Robert Walker.
Hello, how's it going?
Doing well, Robert. Yourself?
Doing pretty well.
Awesome. Awesome. You can follow Robert on Twitter at Trappin, T-R-A-U-P-P-I-N. You can follow me at JB Barron. So those are the Twitter handles. Those are out of the way. Before we get started, I'd like to remind our listeners that we are on iTunes and Stitcher. iTunes and Stitcher, that's right. We are moving on up in the world, so feel free to subscribe, like, listen to all new and archived episodes. Actually, I got the wrong order on that. Let me say that again. This is already an edit. So feel free to listen to all... Damn it. I can't get this right. Feel free to listen to all new and archived episodes. Subscribe, leave a review, leave a rating. Really would appreciate it as we move on up and hope to continue providing a great spoken content for the rest of the month and into 2017. But before we get too far into the future, we'll do a little La Liga whip around here. 14 match days complete. 14 match days complete in Liga Santander. And a lot of wild happenings this weekend. Only one team in the top 15 won this weekend, Robert.
Yes, indeed. It was a confusing weekend. Obviously, the big news was the Clásico, which was, a draw. But Sergio Ramos, we know all about the last-minute headers and whatnot.
So. There was a Barcelona fan, I can assume, tweeting to the account, "So this is what it feels like, huh?" And I said, "No, this is about 10% of what it feels like, dude."
Yeah, exactly.
You don't even know 90% of it.
So, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, we'll start with Saturday's game in what was before today the shock result of the weekend. Granada 2, Sevilla 1. Winless Granada, winless no more. Goals from Pereira and Lomban, enough to see off Sevilla, who got a late penalty from Wissam Ben Yedder, but it, of course, was not enough. Granada are now no longer the bottom side in La Liga. And if this result is any indication, Sevilla might want to be careful about qualifying for the Champions League last 16 this week.
That was a crazy result. I mean, Granada hadn't won a game all season, and Sevilla have looked really good so far this season. So it's pretty shocking.
Not in this one.
No, not at all.
As Robert mentioned, there was a Clásico on Saturday. It was not a very good Clásico, but it was a Clásico nonetheless. Barcelona 1, Real Madrid 1. Sergio Ramos scored the late header. Leganés 0, Villarreal 0. We reached that point in the season where Villarreal stopped scoring goals and dropped points inexplicably to lesser teams. Leganés can now attest to that. On Sunday, Real Betis 3, Celta Vigo 3. Betis already playing better football under new manager Victor Sanchez. Athletic Club, again, the only team in the top 15 that won this weekend. They beat Eibar 3-1 at San Mamés. Sporting Gijón notching a 3-1 win over Osasuna, who are now bottom of La Liga. Alaves 1, Las Palmas 1, and Valencia and Malaga. Great game this was. Pablo Fornals scoring in the 3rd minute and the 93rd minute for Malaga to clinch the 2-2 draw there.
Valencia, exactly. Valencia, that was unbelievable.
He scored the first goal. He scored was amazing.
Oh yeah, that was a great volley. And even the last one, Valencia. God, they have absolutely fallen off a cliff this season. Losing Andre Gomez and Mustafi really hurt them.
Alcácer too.
Yeah, exactly.
They have just 3 wins from 14 games. They are on 12 points, which is tied for 18th and in the drop zone.
Level with Sporting Gijón.
Not great there. And the game today, which I think was the shock of the week, Deportivo La Coruña 5, Real Sociedad 1. At Riazor, just a thrashing handed out by a previously offensively challenged Deport. Not anymore after this one. They had scored 13 goals in 13 games before today. They scored 5 against Sociedad. The one result we did not mention, Atletico Madrid 0, Espanyol 0. We're going to talk all about that one now. What a crap game this was. Robert, initial thoughts on said crap game?
Well, it's interesting because sort of the problems we talked about last week with the Gabby-Thiago partnership of it being a little bit too defensive and not really offering enough going forward sort of reared its ugly head in this one. I mean, Atletico absolutely tried to break down the door. I mean, they put in 32 crosses compared to Espanyol's 7 in this game. So, I mean, it was a pretty dire offensive performance, honestly.
Yeah, that's a pretty succinct analysis. And we're done here. Thanks for listening.
Yeah, I mean, a 0-0 at home is never really good. I mean, Espanyol are okay, but you'd think this would be the game where you'd maybe go not as conservative with the Gabby and Thiago partnership in midfield. You'd maybe risk it a little bit to try to get some more goals, but apparently that wasn't the move for this one.
No, Espanyol had kept, what, 4 straight clean sheets in La Liga?
Something like that.
I think they'd kept 4 in a row. So, naturally, you're going to go more defensive, right?
Yeah.
Naturally. The tactical setup from the very beginning, with Gabby and Thiago in the center of the park, with Koke out on the wing, the tactical setup from the very beginning lent itself to Kike Sanchez-Flores and Espanyol just staying compact, staying organized, and seeing this one out, which they did. It's exactly what happened. You could have seen this coming from a mile away. We were talking about it with Carlo Valladares on the last Colchonero chat, how Atleti, okay, the bleeding had stopped. You need to return to the more open style now. Not the case.
Right. And you'd think with the game against Bayern Munich coming up, that would be the one where you'd play the Gabby-Thiago partnership to be more defensive against a better offensive team. And this one, you could probably risk it a little bit more and drop out Thiago, have Koke in there, and maybe Gaitán or Correa on the wing. But nope. not this one. And we paid the price for it.
Atleti managed, I think, one great chance that I can recall. Maybe 2, but 1 definite great chance over the 90 minutes. That's not acceptable.
Right.
It's not acceptable.
That would be the Griezmann one, or?
The Gaitán setting up Griezmann, that was a good one. I think the other one was also a Griezmann chance. It was about 25 minutes to go from time.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, so I think Griezmann had the two best chances. Griezmann played pretty badly, but he had the two best chances of the game.
Yeah, the Atleti only had 3 non-blocked shots on target the whole game. 2 were from Gabby from long distance, and then the one from Griezmann, as we mentioned, inside the box. So,
it's almost like Espanyol were perfectly set up to defend that.
Yeah, exactly. It's almost like they came looking for a draw in this game.
Yeah. But I'm going to get a little controversial here and say this wasn't bad. This was actually kind of good. All the consternation about this result, Atleti are still in the top 4 because everything else that happened this weekend. Only 1 team in the top 15 won.
It looks worse because of the results that happened around them, because there was sort of an opportunity for Atleti to capitalize and maybe move on level points with Sevilla. Obviously, Sevilla have the head-to-head, but still. It looks like a good opportunity, but maybe this will inspire Simeone to maybe rely less on the Gabby-Thiago partnerships in games where they need to break down the opposition defense, a very stern defense.
I mean, he has to, right? I wrote a column on this after the game. It's on the blog. It's similar to what we've been talking about the last few weeks, where this is the second year running that Simeone has had the club purchase players who play a different style, more direct players, more pacey players, players who can make things happen in terms of pace, in terms of dribbling, and are more conducive to playing in a more open style. But this is the second year running where Simeone has moved away from this because of a loss of defensive solidity, because of shipping a few goals. And you're starting to see the effects of it now. Yes, Atleti kept a 4th straight clean sheet. It's the 100th clean sheet in La Liga under Simeone. But Espanyol is a team you should be beating. They had the best chances of the game. Gerard Moreno had a great chance at the end of the first half, and then I think it was Baptiste Thau who had another great chance. Oblak saved both. He was a mattress maker of the match by far.
Absolutely.
Without him, Espanyol win this game.
Yeah, and when your best player on the pitch is the goalkeeper, you know there's a problem.
Is a problem, yes.
Yeah, especially against a team like Espanyol. No offense to them, of course. They've been good this season, but still at home against Espanyol. And to stay in this title race, Atleti probably needed the 3 points. I mean, it's okay because the other teams dropped points, but still, you'd like to see 3 points out of this one.
Yeah, and it raises more concerns as to are Atleti actually going to go through this evolution, or is it going to be left to somebody else?
Right.
Is Cholismo going to die with Cholo, and is he going to leave the evolution to a more attacking style while still keeping structure? Is that going to be left to somebody else? I think Cholo is capable of doing it. He has the players, is capable of leading this evolution. He certainly has the players currently in the team to do it, but something is holding him back. And it's the fear of conceding goals. It's the fear of losing solidity that is holding him back and holding this team back in La Liga.
Yeah, and you can understand him getting cold feet about it a little bit after that poor run of results where the loss to Sociedad, the loss to Real Madrid, the crazy game with Malaga. But still, you'd think at a certain point you kind of just have to bite the bullet and say, you know, you need to score more goals, especially in the league where you're trailing and you need to catch up with the team.
And this is,
I don't know.
Yeah, and this is, I think, a key difference between how the team plays in La Liga and how the team plays in the Champions League. In the Champions League, Cholismo is fine, because the quality of opponents Atletico come up against are a higher quality, have more attacking options, more attacking talent, and just have more quality. And Cholismo works more in the latter stages of the Champions League, frustrating higher quality teams like Barcelona, like Bayern. In La Liga, it's not working anymore. It doesn't work anymore. Teams that have wised up to it. Teams know that can be stopped. The Atletico playing in this manner, they can be frustrated in attack because you're playing more reductive tactics while trying to play positive football. It doesn't make sense. It's illogical, and it can easily be stopped because you run out of ideas way before the game ends.
Right, and most of the games in La Liga you should probably be looking to win, especially if you're going to be putting up a title challenge. And teams most of the time around, you know, mid to lower table are going to be totally fine with taking a point against Atleti. So the onus is on Atletico to score the goals, and if they don't have the players to do it, then, you know, that's a problem. And I think it's hurting Koke a bit because it's sort of weird. The permanent shift to the middle, as it said, you know, he's been shifted out to the wing again, and it's sort of slowing his progression because of Thiago's presence in that midfield.
Yeah, and this is the conversation that started when Thiago broke his leg. Oh, this is going to definitely mean Koke or Saul now make the permanent switch to the middle. And, you know, Saul's situation is different. Saul is just is down to bad form. But it's still not really sinking in. It's still not really, I guess it's not a certainty anymore. It's not, I'm going to edit this out because I'm not making sense. But it's not nailed on anymore for Simeone. That he seems to be backing away from what he said to the press, where he said, look, we've been working with Koke for 2 or 3 years to make this move permanent. And he seems to have backed away from it again. Koke did drift to the middle a bit, but he had a lot of his touches on the left side. And he's not as effective in attack when he is on the left side. It has been proven over the past two, now into three seasons, that he is more effective through the middle. But the problem is you play him through the middle and you are a bit more fragile.
Right, you're more fragile. But, you know, when you have him in the midfield for the whole 90 minutes, central midfield, that is, you know, he can offer more going forward. He can go through the center and he can drift out to the wings as usual. But when you have sort of Thiago holding up, you know, or clogging a space, him and Gabby sort of, I don't want to say get in the way, but, you know, they do. They slow his progress, yeah. I mean, they make it harder for him to get forward and pick those very creative passes that not too many people on the team can make, so.
like you're not going to move Thiago to the wing. Thiago is stuck in the center. He's not going to be moved from central midfield. You're just going to have to deal with it. And maybe Simeone is not the manager. And I'm not to say we don't love Simeone and everything he has done for the club, but perhaps he is just not the manager to see these changes fully through. Maybe he's the man to start the evolution, but maybe he's not the man to see it to the very end.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see with his successor, which we anticipate will be in 2018 when his contract expires, to see if it's a more attacking manager that is going to be able to shape the squad in a different way, to operate differently. But even then, you know, if Koke doesn't have the experience of playing through the midfield as much as we probably want him to, or as much as he'd like to, then, you know, it might make that transition a bit more difficult.
Yeah, and the key is, and we've talked about this before too, the key is to have the building blocks in place. Uh-huh. And a lot of these players are in place for now. We don't know about 2 years from now, but they're in place right now. So with the league gone, and I think that the league is gone. It was gone after the Derby loss. The key is now to make sure you're in top four. With the league gone, why wouldn't you just say, okay, you know we have enough talent to probably see this through and finish fourth, third, or fourth. Why not play this more expansive style in La Liga? It has generated some great results when we've done it this year, such as the win at Celta, the win against Sporting Gijón, the win against Granada. Atleti scored 16 goals in those three games playing this style. But a couple really odd games against Sevilla, Sociedad, even the Malaga game, which was 4-2, those games gave Simeone some pause. And again, it's committing to a style. It's about committing to what's really important. And I think what's most important is the Champions League. Up or La Champions. So La Liga needs to be the testing ground now.
Right.
So 24 match days to go. You have a lot of home games in the second half of the season against these teams whose grounds have you visited this season already. This season, you're going to have a lot of home games in the second half and a chance to get back some of those points that you've dropped. Why not do it playing this more attacking style that has so far looked good for the most part?
And if you know, there's going to be any chance at all of Atleti getting to a title, they have to just keep winning. I mean, period. And, you know, drawing 0-0 against Espanyol and teams like that, it's not going to do us any favors going forward. Yeah. And it'd take a monumental collapse from Real Madrid, which they are capable of, as we know. But at this point, I think it's probably gone, you know.
I think
quite a few points off.
I think they're the champions elect, pretty much. I just think they're not even healthy, and they have a pretty comfy advantage over Barcelona, Sevilla, Atleti. But that's beside the point. The point is that everything coming out from the club so far has said, no, we don't think the league is gone. 9 points is not insurmountable. That's what Enrique Cerezo said. We can overcome a 9-point deficit. Simeone has said, you know, we're not out of La Liga. They need to accept reality sooner rather than later. This result didn't doom them. The Derby result did. But this just reinforces that they need to change how they play in La Liga, at least in La Liga. Champions League, we won't know until we get to the knockout stage. It's worked.
That's a scary
thing. It's worked
in
the last 3 years. You know, Atleti have made 2 finals in the last 3 years. Cholismo still works there. But it's not working in La Liga anymore. Too many teams know how to counter it now.
And the scary thing is with the Champions League is that crazy things happen all the time. And it's impossible to predict. You know, you get a bad draw in the round of 16 or in the quarterfinals, and, you know, it's a hard road. But, God, I mean, you just can't see Real Madrid or Barcelona dropping points against pretty much anyone. And when they do, it's, you know, on Atleti to capitalize.
How do we know Atleti will capitalize? They haven't really yet this season capitalized. They were leaders for a couple of weeks, but other than that was in September and October. We're in December now. They haven't really capitalized on it since. They were going on about 6 weeks of poor play in the league.
Yeah, exactly.
So something's got to give. And Atleti managed only 3 shots on target in this game, despite managing 2/3 possession and completing 84% of their passes, excuse me. So the numbers say that they played better than the eye test did, because to me it looked like they were just really stale, really stagnant, out of ideas, not really inspired. Espanyol frustrated them, and credit to Quique Sanchez Flores and his defense, really organized, really good game from Diego Reyes in particular at center back.
And you could see the Athletic players just getting more and more frustrated as the game went on. I remember one specific shot of Griezmann just looking absolutely distressed towards the end of the game when he thought he was fouled or missed a shot. I don't remember what the situation was. But
yeah, he pulled up his shirt to cover his face. Like, that's just the epitome of frustration.
with
this game and with everything that went on.
And Espanyol made 32 clearances in that game. I mean, if that doesn't tell the whole story, then I don't know
It was predictable. There is there are really not a variety of ways you can attack when playing more reductive tactics that Atletico popularized, that Atletico were so good at for a few years under Simeone. There are only so many ways you can attack while playing in that system. Whereas in a more open, more expansive system, you have more room for creativity, you have more room for improvisation. And that's the system that needed to be in place against Espanyol to break down a team that had kept four consecutive clean sheets.
Right, and you'd expect in past years, you know, Athletic would score from a corner, you know, sort of the typical thing, you know, Godin would head in a chance and, you know, that'd do it 1-0, but it just hasn't been happening, and that's sort of been the difference between being really close to the leaders of the league and being in fourth as we are now, 9 points off the top. So
yeah, I think that more positively, though, there were a couple good performances in this game. Oblak, of course, made two humongous saves. He was, as we mentioned, the mattress maker of the match. Also thought Jose Ma played very well. His most consistent performance in a while, I think. I don't think he made too many egregious errors that he is known for making. I think he was mostly very good. Godin ventured forward a lot, which, you know, he was playing as a striker at times, while Gaitán and Correa were sitting on the bench. Not great.
No, not what you want to see. No.
Not the greatest. And yeah, that was another thing from this game, actually, that I wanted to talk about. Angel Correa and Nico Gaitán were two of the three substitutes. Saúl came on in the final 10 minutes when I think everyone knew this was going to finish goalless.
Mm-hmm.
Simeone waited way too long to throw those two on. They needed to come on about 10 minutes after halftime, around 55th, 60th minute. Gaitán didn't come on till the 67th minute. Correa didn't come on till the 71st minute. He waited too long.
Yeah, I mean, at halftime, you could sort of see that this was going to be one of those games where you just had to bust down the door to get any kind of result from this match, you know, and keeping Thiago and Gabby in there for quite some time was not really going anywhere in an attacking sense. So it's not like LA were under a huge amount of pressure, really. I mean, I don't know. It didn't really make a whole lot of sense to me either.
Yeah, and Simeone is usually so good with his substitutes, and he eventually made the right decision getting getting Thiago off, getting Gaitán on. Gamero was also pretty unimpressive. He came off for Angel Correa, and Correa was okay. He got too flashy at times, which he is wont to do. Too often, I think he likes to dribble through a defense rather than just make the simple pass that needs to be made. But he'll learn with age that you don't always have to be the showstopper. Gaitán's performance was more worrying because he was excellent midweek. He got an opportunity midweek against Tijuelo in the Copa del Rey. Of course, lower level opposition, but he got a chance. He got all 90 minutes in. And Simeone's comments after that game were, no, look, he needs to really adopt the mentality, the team-first mentality. And Gaitán came on in this game, and he was just slipping all over the place. He had no chemistry with anyone. He misplaced his crosses, except the one to Griezmann, which Griezmann then fired right at Diego Lopez. But again, Gaitán probably just played himself right back onto the bench, unfortunately.
Right, yeah, and it's worrying. I mean, it's okay if he's on the bench, if he's coming on and providing some sort of attacking threat, but
it just really wasn't.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, you want to at least see him provide something going forward, and the fact that he's not even able to gel off the bench or offer a whole lot is a bit concerning given how much this was paid for him and that he's not a young player. He's a veteran. He should be able to offer more. But,
you know, now he looks like, you know, it looks like Cholismo has claimed another victim in Gaitán. You know, but, you know, the Griezmann example is one that we constantly reference, where Griezmann didn't really do a whole lot his first few months at Atleti. Then he scored a hat trick in Bilbao and hasn't looked back since. But to guys like Vieto, last year, Jackson was a different story. Jackson was just terrible at everything. But Vieto last year, and then and now Gaetan this year, just hasn't clicked for him. And I don't know when or even if it's going to click. I mean, we still have plenty of time in this season. We got 5 months to go. Maybe he will get an opportunity here or there and run with it and not look back. But it just not seeing it so far, not nearly consistent enough to warrant a place in the team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you probably start Correa over him at this point if you're gonna have Koke and Gabby in the middle. So that is concerning, given how much was paid for him and all the expectation that he has on his shoulders.
Yeah, so. On the season preview pod, Robbie Dunn and myself were talking about how he would be the key player this season, and we were kind of wrong on that.
He would be the key player, and it just through almost four months now.
Well, not really almost 4 months, more like 3 months, but it's just not coming together.
Yeah, there was a lot of expectation given the transfer fee and given what he had done at Benfica over the last 2 years, but he just hasn't been able to pull it off yet in the league. You do wonder, you know, we see this from time to time, players coming from leagues like the Portuguese league struggle to adapt in a more tougher league. I mean, I don't want to say that Portuguese league's particularly bad, but it's certainly a step up in quality going to La Liga from the Portuguese league. So
yeah, it's definitely a different experience. Mm-hmm. Definitely a step up. What for else sure. in this game?
I mean, you know, 0-0 draw. The crossing thing, I mean, it was just crazy to me. 32 times. I mean, it's almost the David Moyes tactic. Like, which you know, that's probably about the worst thing you could say. But
don't knock the Moyes. Three wins in four at Sunderland.
Yeah.
Don't knock it.
Don't knock the lumping the ball into the box. And Gabby, the thing for me was that Gabby was offering probably some of the better shots. I mean, they were from outside the box, granted, but they were some of the most, like, opportunities in the match where you thought, all right, that has a chance. And if one of those goes in, it's a different story. But here we are.
Yeah, here we are talking about a depressing goalless draw.
Yeah, for sure.
So I think we're done with that. I think that's enough conversation on that game.
Probably
good enough there. Yeah, so Atleti's still in fourth despite that goalless draw against Espanyol. The next league game is at Villarreal, so it certainly does not get any easier. At El Madrigal on Monday, December 12, after the game against Bayern Munich on Tuesday.
Right. We're not looking forward to the game at El Madrigal. No, even given Villarreal's bad form in recent weeks, I mean, you'd say it's probably a good time to play them, but still, you know, they're a dangerous team and they look good earlier in the season, so not a team you'd underestimate at all.
God, no.
Especially not at home.
Nope. So, yeah. And we'll touch more on that later on this week. Some news items now before we go to break. Rachid Ghezzal from Lyon. The 24-year-old Algerian has been linked with Atletico. Potential move is in the offing. I see one complication with it. It's called a transfer ban. Mm-hmm. But Atleti are rumored to be zeroing in on the 24-year-old, who is out of contract in the summer. Lyon have offered him a new deal, but he hasn't taken it yet. Would be an interesting signing. He's a pretty good player and would help out in attack, would give Atleti some more depth on the wings.
Yeah, it's curious to see what's going to happen in January if they go the sort of Barcelona route of signing players that aren't going to be able to be registered and play until the ban is lifted. But
they'll certainly do that next summer. They'll certainly sign some guys next summer that just won't be able to play.
Yeah,
but for
which
now,
is frustrating.
It's kind of in limbo. The CAS decision has not come down yet, but they're likely going to rule against Atleti. It was around this time 2 years ago when the CAS handed Barcelona the decision that, hey, you're not going to get off of this. You know, you're going to take your transfer ban. So the expectation is that both Atletico and Real Madrid will be told, you know, to screw off, basically.
Yeah, I don't anticipate it being anyone given a special exception you know, unless Real Madrid hand them some money under the table. But, you know, yeah, but, gosh, I mean, he is a good player.
If he is under contract, it would be interesting.
Right. I don't know the specifics of if a player is out of contract, if the transfer ban still applies, if you can pick up free agents. The specifics of that are unclear to me. I don't know if you know about that.
Yeah, we'll have to do a little more. I have to do a little more investigating on the rules for free transfers. I think they're fair game. It would make sense that they're fair game.
Well, then in that case, it would be a pretty smart deal because Atletico will certainly need some kind of reinforcements. You know, especially if there's a transfer ban, and you know, if you can get good players on free transfers, then that's just the best of both worlds.
Absolutely. But yeah, at last check, the CAS appeal is ongoing. We'll likely hear a decision soon enough. In other news, according to Roberto Gomez of Onda Cero, Atleti's new stadium will be getting a name on Friday. Hooray.
Woohoo.
Javier Tebas, the La Liga chief, jokingly referenced it as the Wanda a couple weeks back. Some people took it and ran with it. Others were smart and didn't run with it because we knew he was being a sarcastic prick.
Yeah, it's an interesting situation to see what it does end up being called. There's a lot of weird stuff going around this new stadium.
The popular name among the fans is Estadio Luis Aragonés. That would be great, really honoring the club's history. But I think that there has to be a sponsor on this thing.
Probably so. Yeah. Given the way modern football is, it wouldn't be shocking at all.
Yeah, yeah. And we're still not even sure if it's going to open next year. There are so many problems with public access. There's so many problems with the roadways leading into the stadium. And who even knows if it's even going to open next year? Atleti have been firm that, yes, it's going to open. We are very excited for it. They run this great promotional campaign starting in the summer, and they run it throughout 2016. But Until it opens, it's not open until it opens.
And stadium moves make me very, very nervous as a general rule. There's so many things that can go wrong. I mean, examples in the past of like, well, this year, especially with West Ham, I know they're a much smaller club comparatively, but, you know, you can have weird atmosphere. I mean, the fans, you just don't have the same connection with the place that you did with an older stadium, so it's going to be interesting to see how they transition to this new place.
Yeah, it's a bigger,
whatever it's called.
it's La Pineta for now, but it's a bigger stadium. It's two decades younger than the Calderon, and it looks really cool because the lighting all around the exterior, similar to Allianz Arena, where Atleti will be going Tuesday. But it looks really cool. It's going to be really big, but you lose something when you move to a new stadium. I don't think anything is going to replicate the atmosphere of the Calderon. No matter what they try, it's just not going to be the same. Now, Atleti will still be good, and this isn't going to be a West Ham situation where there's shady money going around and you're crap and you're crap at home. That it's going to be different, but you lose something.
Definitely, and when you move into a bigger stadium, it's a weird transition of creating the same atmosphere that you had in the older grounds. You know, it's easier to make a lot of noise and for it to be a hard atmosphere for opponents to come into in a smaller, less capacity stadium than when you go into a big new one. It's hard to fill that space.
Like the Calderon is old. It's dirty. It's next to a brewery. It's on the river. You know, it's special. This is in the suburbs. This is in like in more Madrid territory, in Real Madrid territory. It's going to be nice. It's going to be dope, but it's not the Calderon.
Right, and nothing will ever be. And it's going to take. Yeah, it's going to take a few years for it to feel like home.
Yeah.
So regardless of the results.
So we'll wait to see if there is indeed an announcement on the new name on Friday. We'll cover it on the blog if indeed there is. Last news item. Giovanni Simeone, Diego Simeone's son, talking up his dad's potential move to Inter in a couple of years, saying his dad will definitely manage Inter and he would love to play for him at the same club.
Yeah, I mean, we've sort of seen this coming. I mean, there's been a lot of quotes from Giovanni himself over the past year or so about Inter and Diego, and he said it himself that he'd like to go there at some point. And given how terrible Inter are at the moment, they're going to be desperate for him to come there as soon as he can. But
they are literally just, Zanetti is just staring at his watch saying, is it 2018 yet? Is it 2018 yet?
I mean, really, it is really bad for them at the moment. They're in a very bad way.
Yeah, they got thrashed by Napoli at the weekend. That was an ugly game. It was over very quick. But
they're already out of the Europa League too. So
no, two losses to Hapoel Be'er Sheva.
Yeah,
Israeli Giants.
Yeah.
So yeah, they're definitely in a bad way, and they need someone like Simeone to rescue them, but can't have him yet.
Right, so, and I guess the good thing is that we know it's coming. We know he's going to leave in 2018, most likely.
He hasn't kept us under any illusions. We know it's happening. We know it is. We've talked about it before. We know it's going to happen. It's not going to surprise anyone. Even if it happens this coming summer, it won't surprise anyone. I mean, it would be surprising because he has maintained he wants to manage in the new stadium. But when the day does come, it won't come as a shock. It's kind of like when Fernando Torres left 10 years ago. Everyone knew it was going to happen. He had received offers for years. Atletico did not nearly have the stature, the reputation to keep him and to hold him and his ambitions, keep them at bay. Everyone knew Torres was moving. This is kind of similar.
Right, and when the announcement about him reducing the length of his contract came in, it was sort of like, all right, now we know when the date is that he's probably going to be leaving. So, you know, I mean, at least he's not playing games with Atleti, but still, it gives him time to weigh up a replacement, whoever it may be.
Yep, and that is a lot of speculation, so we won't really dive into that.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, anything else, Robert?
I think that's about it for us.
Great. Follow Robert on Twitter at Trappin, TRAUPPIN. Follow me at JB Baron. After this, I'll be back with Davis Van Opdorp of Bavarian Football Works to talk Bayern and Atleti on Tuesday.
All right. See you later.
All right. Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
All right.
Chocolate with shots of Bailey's in it and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And then you can get a bunch of stuff to eat, like bratwurst and stuff, fresh. So it's awesome.
Oh, man. That sounds amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That is definitely not familiar to me, but I'm going to have to go to Germany one of these Decembers. just yeah, for that, really. That sounds delightful.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah. Oh, God, I'm glad you're enjoying that.
Yeah.
Yeah, send some stuff to me if you don't mind.
Okay.
Yeah, that sounds great. So, yeah, we're going to get started. Just probably 20, 30 minutes about the game tomorrow.
Okay.
Yeah, this is going to be an interesting one because it's kind of a dead rubber game.
That's exactly what it is.
Well, I'd like to clinch a perfect group stage. It's the only meaningful thing about this, but there's nothing else that can come from this game, so it's pretty interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And I won't be able to watch it. I'll be in the air. I'm flying to Michigan for a week tomorrow morning.
Okay.
I won't be able to watch it, but I will be recording it and figuring out some way to write about it.
Yeah. Are you going home? Are you originally from Michigan?
I'm visiting family there. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
So yeah, that's cool. Where all my family's at.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be really snowy and really cold, but I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah.
And no Christmas, and no Christmas markets.
No Christmas markets. But we don't have snow, so we have to have Christmas markets. So.
Yeah, exactly. Alrighty, let me get my notes here, and we'll get started.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Welcome back to Colchonero Chat. I'm joined now by Davis Van Opdorp. He is a reporter for Deutsche Welle in Germany, as well as a contributor to Bavarian Football Works, SB Nation's Bayern Munich blog. Davis, how are you, man?
I'm good. Good.
Great to have you back on the program to talk a little bit of Bayern Munich Atletico Madrid. That is the game on Tuesday night in Munich, Allianz Arena, the site of Atleti's 2-1 loss last May that put them through to the Champions League final. This is
the best loss that you could possibly ever have.
Yeah, absolutely. It was the best loss ever.
Mm-hmm.
Completely dominated, but still got through.
Mm-hmm.
This is going to be an interesting one. A lot has changed since the last time these two met in match day two in Madrid, mm-hmm. a 1-0 win for Atleti. This is match day six. The group stage is going to be over tomorrow, and soon enough we'll know the results of the last 16 draw. So it's a dead rubber game. The only meaningful part of this game, which I'll talk about in a little bit, is the potential for a perfect group stage for Atleti. 6 wins from 6, but Atleti secured top spot in match day 5 after beating PSV and after Bayern's shock loss in Russia. What happened in that game against Rostov?
Yeah, I mean, there's these times when the defense has kind of been in flux, and the midfield hasn't really been supporting the defense as it has in the past. I mean, even under Pep Guardiola, he's known as an attacking coach, but he always had this possession-based mindset where you defend with your possession. Whereas, basically, the most consistent defender has been Mats Hummels for Bayern Munich, and this is his first season there. So he doesn't. So there's. And Philipp Lahm has not done as well as in defense as he has, which is why he played midfield against Rostov. But they've struggled with their motivation under Ancelotti. I mean, it's not. I don't think Ancelotti's that kind of manager that is very gung ho like Pep Guardiola was. And I think that was mainly the issue.
Yeah, that was actually going to be my next question about Ancelotti. Is the honeymoon phase over?
Yeah, that was. I mean, it's been over for actually since that Atletico loss. It's been over. I mean, they've dropped points in the league several times since that loss. They, there's been multiple quote unquote crises. Although I don't know if they're necessarily crises if they're still second in the table, but considering they've won the last 4 Bundesliga titles, it's very weird to see them in second place. But I think the defenders have still defended him. I should say the players have still defended him. He's been. I think that they recognize that it's a new coach with new ideas. But there's been times where basically there's been players on the field that don't know what they're supposed to do. And I think that's something that's very different. You would have never seen that under Pep Guardiola.
No, everyone had a very clear idea of what they were doing. And it was after that Atleti game where the German press started to go after Ancelotti. And even though Bayern are second in the league, just 1 loss through 13 matches, the play has been, it's been less consistent, and you've now seen that in the Champions League. The result against Rostov was a shocker, 3-2 that one finished, if you don't recall, and it helped Atleti win the group. What else has changed since that game in Madrid?
Well, I mean, they've also struggled with their fair share of injuries as well. I mean, that's definitely worth mentioning. I think Kingsley Coman, who's their French talent that came over from Juventus last season, had a really good season under Pep Guardiola. He didn't really find his feet under Ancelotti, and he didn't really have a chance to because he has been injured, and now he's not going to come back until 2017. And I think that was a big loss. But I mean, Arturo Vidal has also been inconsistent because of his responsibilities with Chile. Douglas Costa has been injured. He was one of their more consistent players, although he did tail off the end of the last season. But I mean, even the big two, which is Frank Ribery and Arjen Robben, you see the difference when they're on the field. And this past weekend was the first time they had been started together since the end of last season. So if you have these two players that you've been building your club around for the last 5 years and neither of them are there, it's really hard to get the results that you need.
Yeah, it would be akin to Atleti losing, you know, Gabby and Thiago in midfield. It would be akin to seeing Koke or Griezmann go out. It's tough to have those players that have been at, you know, and Robin and Ribery have been at the core of this resurgence starting earlier this decade when Bayern became a force again in the Champions League. And, you know, Robin always gets hurt, and it's tough to just see them both on the pitch now.
Well, the other thing I should say is, I mean, Thomas Müller has really struggled with form. I mean, it's been 13 match days now in the Bundesliga, and he hasn't scored.
That's extremely strange.
That has been the biggest that has been the biggest talking point of the Bayern players, because, I mean, Lewandowski is still, he has 9 goals in the Bundesliga so far. He scored a decent amount in the Champions League. But Thomas Müller has been was his strike partner last year. He played mostly in behind. Ancelotti hasn't been playing him in the same position that Pep Guardiola has, and that might have contributed to it as well. But yeah, he has not been the same Thomas Müller that we're used to seeing. He had a few assists over the in recent weeks, but he still has not gotten the score sheet himself. And it's weird to say that Thomas Müller hasn't scored a goal in 13 league games.
Yeah, that's because he's Thomas Müller. He's an incredible player. Mm-hmm. That is so strange. So yeah, things that haven't quite gone right for Bayern Munich yet, but it's expected to. They're expected to get better over the course of the season. Of course, Ancelotti has had this reputation as not taking the league super seriously. Leipzig currently atop the Bundesliga. That's an incredible story, isn't it? I know there's a much different perception in Germany.
They're a very different club, but I'll say that. I mean, they obviously don't have any European responsibilities. This is obviously their first season in the top flight. They're owned by Red Bull. So in January, they're going to be able to go out and spend 30 million, 40 million euros on a player if they really want to, if they think that the Bundesliga title is within their reach. Bayern Munich wouldn't do that. They're not that kind of club. They're much more frugal, even though they have all this money to spend. They spend money more on sure things. Like, Douglas Costa was a sure thing when he came in last year. Arturo Vidal, obviously, was considered one of the best midfielders. He was a sure thing. So I think that's the biggest thing, is that they're obviously, the Leipzig had this opportunity there. And like as you said, since Ancelotti doesn't really care, or he does care. I shouldn't say that he doesn't care.
Sure.
But he's more willing to rotate if he can rotate players, if it means maybe dropping points, I think he'd be more willing to do that. But he's also, and because he's rotated the team so much, he hasn't really found that great mix of players, that great mixture yet. And I think maybe he'll need the winter break to figure that out, and maybe he'll need the rest of the season to figure that out. But I think that Bayern Munich, I think, are going to be patient with the way he's approaching things. I think the players are appreciating that when they feel like they need to play, they're on the field, and they also recognize that there's a lot of players in the squad. But I think that, Ancelotti hasn't really gotten his rotation policy completely right so far.
Do you think Bayern will need that kind of signing in January, or will this, they have so much depth, will this work itself out?
It has to work itself out. I mean, the last time they bought a player in January, they bought a player on a full transfer in January was in 2010. Actually, I think 2011, January 2011. And that's just not the type of team they are. They do most of their business in the summer. If they do business in the January, it's to prepare for the summer, like signing Robert Lewandowski 6 months early, right, or getting Joshua Kimmich six months early. So it's not their style to buy a player. But I mean, Ancelotti said in his press conference today that the group stage in the Champions League is important, but I mean, it's the knockout stages that really, really matter, which I think is the biggest thing that you can take from the narrative going into this game.
Yeah, and let's talk about this game. It's a dead rubber game. The top two spots in the group have already been secured. Atleti will go through as winners. Bayern will go through as runners-up. And Atleti have a chance to do what few teams have done in the Champions League era, complete a perfect group stage. I think Atleti would become the seventh team to win 6 of 6 in the group stage. I'll talk about what Atleti's plans for this game are in a minute, but for Bayern, this is kind of a weird one. What do you see Ancelotti doing? Is this an experimental kind of game? Who's going to come into the team?
No, I think establish some consistency as well. I think he's committed now to playing Philipp Lahm in midfield, and I think the more games that Lahm can get in midfield, Ancelotti will feel better using him there. I think that I think the biggest changes you'll see is probably in the final third. I wouldn't be surprised if Douglas Costa started for one of Frank Ribery or Arjen Robben. I wouldn't honestly be surprised if Thomas Muller was dropped for this game, because it's not, he doesn't really need to play him against Atletico Madrid. Lewandowski obviously is the better player, and rather than playing Muller in a position that clearly he isn't very good at isn't as good as playing, which is on the right, I think he would probably, he would maybe include Costa and Robin in the same team.
Yeah, that's a little surprising to me, but as you said, Ancelotti really needs to get his rotations down, get a team, a consistent team in there. And even though this game really doesn't matter much, it still could go away. It does matter in the way of determining a consistent team the rest of the season. Atleti are taking their squad to Germany. They're taking their best team there. Caio Henrique, the only B team player that's going to be in the squad. So it looks like a full strength or pretty close to full strength 11 for Atleti on Tuesday.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't expect really anything less because, I mean, obviously they didn't get the win there last year. I was there at the game last year. I was fortunate enough to go cover the game. I think we talked about this before. But basically the way that Atletico played, they were completely defensive, trying to hold on to make it to the final. I'm actually expecting Atletico Madrid to be show more initiative than probably in previous meetings, because I think even in the game in Spain, it was more of a counter pressing type of game rather than Atletico really trying to control what actually happens. That's what I think is going to happen with Atletico Madrid.
Yeah, we would hope so, because Atleti's recently, especially in La Liga, have reverted to that form, starting central midfielders all over the midfield and not scoring many goals. The Champions League performances have just been so different. And what Atletico did really well in the September game, they pressed so well, and they broke really well. They got just a couple great chances in the first half and kept piling on. Really, that game really could have ended 3-0, so I think a lot of Atleti fans will hope to see the same kind of thing tomorrow in the game Munich. Could we see Renato Sanchez in this one? Definitely highly rated signing coming in from Benfica over the summer. How's he gotten on so far as we enter December?
He came probably a year too late. I mean, I think I've said this, obviously working with Pep Guardiola, arguably the best coach in Europe right now, I think that would have been the best opportunity for him. Ancelotti has done his best to try to work with, he's worked with him individually a little bit, but he hasn't found the right way to use him. He's kind of been used as a substitute for Arturo Vidal, but he's not the same player as Arturo Vidal. He obviously doesn't have, being a 19-year-old, he obviously doesn't have that kind of those same instincts, and you can see that very quickly when he's on the field. He was kind of a player that at Benfica that was more free what he does best, which is basically chase the ball down and then try to do things quickly with it going forward. Those kinds of players actually haven't done very well at Bayern Munich recently. There are a few players that came through there. There's one player that came through our academy. His name was Pierre Højbjerg. He's now at Southampton. Yeah. He was kind of the same player going forward. Sebastian Rode, which was another player who's at Dortmund now, he was kind of also that player who would run around and basically try to make things happen by moving forward. And Renato Sanchez hasn't found his place in the team. And he played against Rostov, and obviously Ancelotti still hasn't gotten the best out of him. But Ancelotti hasn't gotten the best out of a lot of players, so I think that he just needs some time to acclimate to a new league and to a new level of football.
And he's still such a talent and still so young. And you're right, he doesn't have that same, I guess, killer instinct that Vidal has. Vidal will just run right through you,
Sanchez, that's true. I mean, I think what also Vidal has is he's always been that player, that warrior player, but yeah. He also had some tactical, at least a little bit more experience and tactical understanding, even I mean, one of the reasons why Bayern Munich bought him is because he had experience in Germany, not just in Europe, but he also had experience in Germany. Whereas, I mean, Renato Sanches was playing in Portugal. That's not like playing in a low level South American league, but it's still not playing in one of the top four leagues in the world. And I mean, that's what I mean when you're a 19-year-old and trying to break into a team. That's what happens. And actually, I think he's 18. I keep on saying he's 19, but I think he's still 18, which is just ridiculous.
Yeah, it's insane, and it's in the difference between the Portuguese league and the German league. Not to slam the Portuguese league, there is quality there, but it's a gulf. There is a gulf in talent there. There is a gulf in the distribution of talent. So I guess we shouldn't be surprised that Renato Sanches is taking his time and he's being brought along kind of slowly or slower than some people thought, because he was linked to Man United and all these other glamorous teams throughout last season. But you have to think he's going to come good, because he just was so great at the Euros and so great at Benfica, and he's still so young. Maybe there's a loan move in his future, do you think? I'm not sure.
I mean, Bayern Munich paid 35 million euros for him. I don't think he's going to – I think they would rather hold on to him and try to develop him in their own team before they send him out on loan somewhere. But I think he's with the right club. I don't think move to Manchester United would have been good for his career.
Probably
I just
not.
Think that he hasn't translated what he basically hasn't translated his skill set into Bayern Munich's team, and I think that's Carlo Ancelotti's job to do, and I don't think he's done that part of his job very well, is trying to get the best out of the skill set that he has. He's kind of tried to let the players express themselves individually rather than putting them in position to express themselves in a certain way, and that's obviously the biggest difference between Bayern Munich's current coach and their last one, and I think that's the problem that he's had all season.
Yeah, I was just going to say that goes back to what you were talking about with Pep and how everything was so regimented, everything was so, you know, everyone knew their roles. This is a little different. It's much more laissez-faire. It's much more relaxed, and that's an adjustment. It's an adjustment for anyone. And, you know, Atleti could be in that same situation when Simeone leaves, because Simeone is very much like a general. Very, very much, this is your role, this is how you'll execute it. And a potential replacement for Cholo could be quite different. So that for the Atletico fans listening to this, and maybe not paying attention to it, maybe you should. Because in a couple of years, this could be a similar scenario. A question about tomorrow's game, and then a question about what's going to happen in February. Scoreline prediction for tomorrow.
I'm still up in the air on this. I think it's honestly going to be. I don't think the game tomorrow is going to be worth watching. I think it's going to be. I think it's going to be a 1-1 draw. I was almost tempted to give a 2-1 win to Atletico Madrid, actually, but I think it's going to probably be a 1-1 draw.
I'm going to say the same thing. I do not think Atletico will go out and get the 6 wins from 6, the 100% record in the group stage. It's probably not going to be a great game. It'll probably be similar to the game against Juventus back in 2014 during the final group stage game that year, which was a goalless draw in Turin. It was an awful game. This will probably be pretty similar. I'll go with 1-1 as well. Mm-hmm. Now, for the last 16 draw, Bayern Munich obviously are finishing second, are going to face a group winner. Have any trepidation, any nerves regarding the draw, who you could get?
You know, I've thought about this, because obviously when this draw came out, I mean, one of the teams was going to have to finish second, and but since they changed the format, it's actually much more favorable to big teams staying in the competition. I mean, they obviously are. I mean, there's definitely a chance that Bayern Munich draw Barcelona or Real Madrid. And they're going to have a tough time, and one of the best teams that are favored to win is going to go out. But they're equally as likely to draw someone like Leicester City,
right,
or someone like Benfica that they beat in the quarterfinals last year. So because it's so polarized like that, it's really hard to say, oh, I'm scared that they finished second, because – I mean, they finished first in their group last year, and then they drew Juventus, and they almost got knocked out in the round of 16. And meanwhile, I mean, Wolfsburg, who is battling a relegation battle now in the Bundesliga, they drew the Belgian team, Ghent. So it's the way that it works now. I think that it could very easily, a draw could very easily, I mean, I would not be afraid if Bayern Munich drew Leicester City or even someone, even a strong defensive team like Monaco. I would not, I would have some trepidations that they wouldn't take those opponents seriously, but it's an opponent that I wouldn't necessarily take seriously. So, but I think that, I think when it comes to the knockout stages, that's when Ancelotti really comes to his best. So I don't, I think no matter who he, the Bayern Munich draw, it's their, Bayern Munich are going to improve in the knockout stages.
Yeah, a Bayern Munich-Real Madrid last 16 tie would be quite tasty. It won't happen. It will never happen. Too early for those two giants to be together. But yeah, Bayern are a good enough team to where there can, you can have a lot of confidence against, other than Real Madrid, Barcelona at this early stage. Like Bayern, Leicester, Bayern would be heavy favorites. Even against Monaco, who have been very impressive in the group stage. I've loved how they've played. I think Bayern would be pretty heavy favorites. Their group B is a mess. I'm not even going to try to untangle that Napoli, Benfica, Besiktas nightmare there. But
yeah,
unless you get drawn with one of the Spanish teams, you don't like to finish second. You'd rather finish first. But this is not your normal second place team. Bayern got maybe a little unlucky with this group. I thought it was the toughest group that was drawn in the Champions League this year, maybe other than Monaco's group, and Monaco have won that. But,
yeah, but that was a tough trial because each of those teams is mediocre,
right?
You know, like it's not all like kind of similar. It's not like it's because there's a bunch of, it's packed with a bunch of really really good teams. Because I mean, the fact that Monaco was a pot four team and is still about to win the group, that's ridiculous. But I mean, if you look, I mean, Real Madrid, even though they're on this ridiculous unbeaten run, they're not in first place in their group, so. But I mean, Bayern Munich could very well avoid Real Madrid, and which means that the worst opponent that they could draw is Barcelona. And I mean, that's a 1 in 7 chance of drawing Barcelona, because Real Madrid can't draw them either. So I think it's I'm really not worried about the knockout stages. I think I'm going to be more worried when it's the quarterfinals, because I think, as you know, as an Atletico fan, that's just so up in the air.
Yeah, that is when, you know, the cream rises to the top. That is when, you know, you have only the great teams left, and your heart is in your mouth for the entire 180 minutes.
But Atletico Madrid have also faced, like, I mean, they've had to face Barcelona, what, twice in the
twice in three years, knocked them out
in the quarterfinals. Like that, I mean, that's a situation that's when I get a little bit more worried. But when it comes to the round of 16, I think that Bayern Munich will be fine.
You wouldn't possibly root for Dortmund to get a result against Madrid, would you?
Well, I mean, I think I'm one of those people that like actually likes to cheer for the German teams in European competition, because the better they do, then the better
chance that
Germany is going to hold on to their fourth Champions League spot. Although now with the new format, I mean, every top four league is going to be guaranteed four spots basically. But I dislike Dortmund less than I dislike Real Madrid, because Real Madrid is the team that Bayern Munich have faced so many times in the Champions League. They've faced them more than any other team. So if Bayern Munich can avoid Real Madrid in the round of 16, I will be happy.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one. Not a fan of Madrid myself over here, as you know. But it should be a good one. That is the Tuesday night game in Munich. Bayern Munich hosting Atletico Madrid, the final group stage game. Match day 6 should be... It's probably not going to be an interesting one, so I shouldn't say that, but tune in. That'll do it for us on Colts Nero Chat today. Remember to like us on Facebook, and remember we are on iTunes as well as Stitcher now, so please leave a review, leave a rating, subscribe. Anything would be appreciated. You can follow me on Twitter at JB Baron. Davis, what's your Twitter handle there?
Davis_VanOpdorp.
Beautiful. Make sure to follow Davis. He's a great guy, and can't thank him enough for coming on the program today.
Yeah, thank you.
My pleasure. And that is it for Colts Nero Chat today. I'm Jeremy Baron signing off. Adios. And we're done. Thanks again, cool. Man. Appreciate it.
All right. I got to go to bed, dude.
All right. Sleep well, man.
Yeah, thanks.
Talk to you tomorrow. Bye.